Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 307.
This week on the podcast, breaking the shutdown record was just too fun not to try it again.
And the Green New Deal is also fun and exciting. And if you don't think so, well, you're probably not running for president.
Plus, we'll tell you all the details of the Virginia abortion mess. Oh, wait, did you think it was all about racism?
And hey, let's just abolish the State of the Union.
Yeah. What if we just announced that we're running for president once from now on?
And Trump doesn't do any work. And now we've got the numbers.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Yeah.
You can find us on other social media. You can find us on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter. Mm-hmm. We're everywhere.
Yeah.
We weren't at a microphone last week. That was one place you couldn't find us.
Nah.
But we're back.
Uh-huh.
And we're back just in time to tell you about all of the most important things that have happened in the last 2 weeks. Which happened this week anyway. Right. All of which happened this week.
We're just keeping you on your toes.
Yeah. Guys. We're releasing on an arbitrary schedule. We know that for 5 years we consistently released this podcast once a week without fail, whether or not we were in town, whether or not we had other things to do. We're not those people anymore. We're tired. We're living in Trump's America.
Right.
And we're recording this podcast arbitrarily on Sundays.
Right. Yeah.
And we might have some more exciting off-cycle news for you coming up because no one knows if the government's going to be open after Friday.
That's right.
We hope that you enjoyed this reprieve that we've been having where the government was open and it seemed like things were doing what they were supposed to do.
Yeah.
But
don't get used to it.
Don't get used to it because the 3 weeks that Trump promised
he was going to... That's right. Gird your loins. Another shutdown is on its way.
3 weeks end on Friday.
Yep.
There are bipartisan talks going on, and they're
not going on anymore. But are they?
Wait, the correct phrase is there were bipartisan talks going on.
Right. They're at a bit of an impasse.
Yeah.
Sources have said that maybe they're not speaking to each other at all anymore.
That's right. Sources from inside of the places where people would know these things,
right.
i.e. aides for various members of bipartisan committee.
Or the actual people on the bipartisan committee. We don't know.
No, we don't know where this is coming from, but we do know that the New York Times has reported that at least one aide has told the New York Times directly that the talks have stopped.
Yeah.
There have been indications from elsewhere. The talks are not stopped because of a budgetary issue, which is interesting because obviously the Democrats were like, you can take your $5.7 billion and go screw yourself.
Right.
And the Republicans, for the most part, were like, fine.
Fine. We get it.
Right. So we're looking at a number between $1.3 billion and $2 billion for physical barriers, i.e. walls or whatever Trump is calling them these weeks, or he's blaming the Democrats for calling them.
Which will probably build about 10 feet worth of
wall.
What they're looking to do.
Well, especially a corrupt government never builds efficiently, too. If we know anything from years
But he's a builder.
Yeah, lots of great historic buildings were built by quote-unquote builders or developers that were in corrupt league with the government. And that's how we ended up with the infamous debacle of the Tweed Courthouse in New York, which is famously a building in New York. It's a beautiful building that cost 10 times what it was supposed to cost
right,
or whatever, and then sat empty for a long time. But in any case, the impasse is being caused by what I think is actually a pretty smart Democratic strategic talking point, which is that they want to limit the number of beds that ICE can use to detain immigrants because they want to make sure that the people that are detained are actually criminals and are not just random people.
People that they're just throwing in these centers.
Right, because as we know, a lot of the ICE detention centers are filled with random people who broke the law in that they came illegally to the country, but did not break a law in that they've broken an actual law.
That's right.
Not a meaningful law, at least.
Right.
You can say that anyone who's here without a visa has broken a law.
Yeah.
Those people are not dangerous criminals, though. Looking for a home.
You know, and they're not trying to limit these beds to, 100.
Right.
They're trying to limit them to 16,500.
Yeah, that's enough.
Which to me seems like enough beds.
That seems like enough beds to cover criminals.
I would think
And everyone else.
And that's what ICE is supposed
need a
to
bed.
Be doing.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But so there are 17 House and Senate lawmakers negotiating this deal. They're the conference committee.
Mm.
I'm surprised they're not being calling themselves the Gang of 17.
Right? Come on.
That's an awkward number to be a gang of, though.
It would
really need to add one member or take away a member in order to be a nice round. It would be best to be the Gang of 20 if they could find three
really
people
good.
To participate.
I'm sure
a gang
they
of
could.
20 is the right size gang.
Yeah.
The Gang of 17 sounds like an idiotic gang of people who couldn't pare themselves down enough to be a more effective gang.
Right.
But so they had set a deadline for this Monday to reach a deal because that's how much time Congress would need to usher this deal through without waiving any rules.
Sure.
I don't think we're going to be there.
Doesn't
look like we're going to be there. But several departments, including some National Defense departments, have their funding expire on Friday. So Friday is kind of the drop dead date.
Right.
And currently, no one's talking anymore.
Yeah.
So it does seem like we might shut down the government.
I'm not surprised by this because I think everybody felt pretty good about the fact that they would be able to get a deal. It reminds me, you know, sometimes if you have a job or like a specific project at work and you say to yourself or even maybe say aloud to other people, you're like, I have 3 weeks to get this done.
Right.
And then 2.5 weeks later, you're like, oh, fuck.
Right.
Yeah. I was supposed to have worked on this.
Yeah, that seems to be what we're working with here.
Right. It seems like that's happening a lot in government. I mean, it's happening everywhere, but...
Specifically, every shutdown seems to be preceded by a period of this, and then
later... Yeah, we got it.
Yeah.
We're there. Yeah. We're going to talk about it. We've all got some demands, but we're going to
work it out. Remember when government did that?
Yeah.
Also, this has been an ongoing problem with any of these really contentious issues, because that's like what happened with the immigration bill.
Yeah.
Remember when the gang of, what was it, six, eight?
Sure.
I don't remember. I think that was the gang. Was that the gang of eight?
Eight, I think so.
Yeah. Here's another problem.
They're the most
famous. You can't have two gangs of the same number. And I at one point went through and looked up all the gangs.
Oh.
And they went all the way up to 14, which is why I think they needed 17 for this, because they were not going to be able to take a gang designation if they needed it later with 14 members or less.
Yeah, but they don't want to get confused with the previous gang.
You can't
14.
Have two gangs of eight, so
you
can never have another convening of a group of eight anymore in Congress. So at some point, it's going to be like a gang of 317.
Especially if you were also on the previous gang of eight.
Oh, that's way confusing.
Because then how could you have a gang war?
No, exactly.
You were in both of them.
No, that's complicated.
That's
really complicated. And Lindsey Graham is
clear delineation.
I would guess in that camp.
Oh, he's in all the
gangs. He's in all the gangs.
Yeah.
Lindsey likes to join a gang if there's one forming out there.
I'm assuming that he's in the gang that likes to do a song and dance number.
I mean, if he's not
he's in
at least one musical theater gang.
He's in the gang of sharks or the gang of jets.
Right.
I have to guess.
Oh, for
Lindsey
sure.
Graham. Yeah.
Yeah, possibly both.
Yes.
And possibly part of a caucus that's like the musical theater lovers caucus that probably convenes when the flower caucus convenes at various times.
Oh, there's crossover with those caucuses too.
For sure. And if you think we're crazy, there is a flower caucus. And it does have a lot. It is bipartisan.
Yeah.
They might want the flower caucus to work this out. They seem like they're ready to talk, you know?
Yeah.
In any case, here's what we do know. Trump has told his allies that he would, grudgingly, accept a $2 billion-ish figure for the border security stuff.
Well, you can accept zero if your plan is to declare a national emergency.
And that's why he's willing to accept it.
That's right.
Because he tweeted yesterday, the wall will get built one way or another. And what he's alluding to is the fact that they're still thinking about whether they want to use executive authority to declare an emergency. And they have come up with a workaround.
Cockamamie.
In case you were worried that the courts would hold this up. Because if you are a person with a brain, you might have been thinking, he can't declare a national emergency when there's no national emergency and then just use whatever money he wants.
But
if that was the government, what would ever get done?
Thankfully, a person without a brain
could come
comes
up with
to
it.
The rescue.
That's
and that
right.
person is Stephen Miller.
That's right.
One of the least
brainy
brain havers out there.
Yeah, if you wondered about the parts of the State of the Union that were poorly written and not at all poetic and wondered why there was such a weird contrast between angry ranting and bizarre, terrible poetry.
Dr. Stephen Miller got his grubby hands on it before it went to the prompter.
In any case, so their plan is to say that the wall needs to be built not to protect America, not to protect the regular citizens that put them in office.
Right.
But to protect the 5,000 border troops that they sent down to the border, specifically to protect the border.
Yeah.
Why we need to protect the people that are there to protect the border is a mystery that no one can solve. But that's how they're going to get it through the courts, so don't worry about anything.
Yeah. That's not getting through the courts, by the way.
Of course, that's a ridiculous idea.
It's a ridiculous idea.
As evidenced by the fact that Stephen Miller is the one who thought of it.
That's right.
That's
how you can place a ridiculous idea.
If you thought that was the only ridiculous thing happening in government this week, though...
Isn't
you were sorely mistaken because you obviously
you weren't paying attention to what was going on in Virginia.
The most exciting story of the last 2 weeks.
I mean, terrible.
Terrible.
But just new fascinating revelations daily, hourly.
Hourly. I want to preface the story by saying that my mother used to lead a delegation of teachers down for a Teaching American History grant down to Monticello. And on one of those trips, she heard someone who was, like, giving them a lecture or whatever, say that in Virginia, they were the good slave owners. And that kind of sums up everything that's wrong with Virginia, I think.
Oh.
Because you can't be a good slave owner. And you can't be a state where every white person has done blackface.
That's right.
And you can't be a state where, while that's happening, people are committing sexual assault.
Right.
You can't be a state where the top four government officials are currently embroiled in similar scandals.
Right. Well, and the same thing happened to, you know, I realized at one point that I was like, oh, wait, one of my best friends grew up in Virginia.
Yeah. Was she
like,
surprised?
Let me ask her what's going on here. And she was like, nah, you just assume that everybody's got racist tendencies. You sort of have to tread lightly. She's black.
Right.
You have to tread lightly. Right. And you just certainly assume that everyone has at least done blackface.
I mean, at this point, we now have the evidence because everyone,
that's right,
including grown adults, is doing
and
blackface.
And it's also no surprise that the Democrats, you know, I mean, we should all remember, too, that, you know, within probably Ralph Northam's lifetime, I don't know how old he is, but I mean, you know, well, I mean, there are still racist Democrats, but I mean, Southern Democrats
were the most racist.
Were the most of the
racists. They were holding up the Civil Rights Act.
Yeah.
They were the kind of people who specifically stood against moving the civil rights agenda forward.
That's right.
Yeah. Not they weren't the people that were just like casual moderates, like they couldn't be bothered. They were the ones who were holding up such that legislation. So there's a few issues going on here. One being that all of the top four officials in government have now been revealed to have some sort of embarrassing, crazy scandal.
Three of them blackface.
One of them sexual otherwise. Assault. The one who was black couldn't do blackface.
No.
So he committed sexual assault.
Yeah.
What we have then on top of that is the fact that no one seems to be aware of how to apologize for such a scandal. Now, in part, that's because no one ever has had to in Virginia before. There's no one to teach you what to say when you've been caught in a blackface scandal.
Right.
And then there's a third part that we're going to get to at the end, which is that this scandal is all about a different scandal.
Right.
But first, we're going to walk you through the main scandal, and then we'll talk about the secondary scandal, which is the ultimate actual scandal
here. Right, the reason for the scandal in the first place. Yeah.
We begin with the governor, Ralph Northam.
Yes.
Following in the proud footsteps of Terry McAuliffe as a Democratic governor of Virginia, who is a mediocre human being, at best. It was a conservative site broke the story that in his 1984 medical school yearbook, and this is maybe part of why people are so horrified, because by medical school, maybe you don't dress in blackface anymore.
Right.
What do we know? We don't know Virginia. There's a page, every student gets a page, and on his page, it shows somebody, there's some questions from him about whether or not it's him, dressed as a man in blackface, and then someone next to them dressed in a Ku Klux Klan style costume.
Yeah.
You don't want to be in that photo, whether or not you're in it.
No.
You don't want that on your page.
No.
You don't want anyone to have posed for that photo that you know.
No.
And that...
And you don't want to have posed for it yourself.
You don't want to have been in it.
Yeah.
Northam initially admitted to being in the photo, then denied that he was in the photo.
Then admitted to being in the photo, but didn't ever say which one he was in the photo.
Right. And also, in that admission, didn't apologize for being in the photo, just said that it was someone else's idea, and he stupidly went along with some idea, and that guy was terrible.
Yeah.
But so, then he denies being in the photo, tells the press he's denying it, but then does admit that he once did wear blackface to dress up as Michael Jackson for a dance contest.
That's right. Which he told us at his press conference, which was a real trip to crazy land, by the way.
It was wild. He got asked to moonwalk?
Yes, because he said... He said that he won the dance competition because he learned how to moonwalk. And one of the reporters asked him if he could do the moonwalk. And he thought about it, and his wife had to tell him that it was not the time or the place to do the moonwalk during his press conference about blackface.
And then, after all of this, we find out that his college nickname was Coon Man.
Nope.
Come on. So he mishandled everything because the first, like, listen, you get caught with some boring, you know, not boring, some terrible racist shit in your past.
Yes.
Boring to Virginians, not boring to the rest of us.
Right.
The first thing that you do is issue a heartfelt apology. Where it seems like maybe you understood that you did something wrong, even if you were going along with
a
friend.
And he's finally gotten himself there, but like a week and a half later.
Yeah, it's taken a week and a half. It's taken days slash over a week for him to get to the point where he has admitted that he did the wrong thing by dressing in blackface at a party and potentially either posing in a photo as a Ku Klux Klan member or a person in blackface.
Yeah.
In any case, he has also this rolling sort of non-admission of guilt where he thought he was in the photo and then he wasn't in the photo and then he was in the photo. No one's really sure at this point whether he understands what he did or whether he's sorry for it.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's really been the heart of the problem because I can see, listen, it's Virginia. If anyone could understand people having racist shit in their past, it's probably Virginians who are well aware that this kind of shit happens all the time in Virginia.
Right.
Here's what you do. You get on television. You say, I made a mistake and I am so sorry for it. And also, 2019 will be the last year this ever happens in Virginia because we are starting a massive program to make sure that the legacy of slavery and racism this state has, which is not admirable, is erased. Not erased,
And that's where he's at, basically now. Because that's what he's saying that he wants to stay in. He wants to make race the central focus of the
rest. But it should not have taken him 10 days. I thought of that 1 minute after I heard that the scandal broke. Right. And it should have been his first statement. Because it made it seem like he needed advisors to tell him that he was responsible for this.
You're right.
Then we get to the case of Justin Fairfax. Initially, everyone was like, oh, perfect.
Right, the lieutenant governor is black.
So he can't have been in a blackface scandal. So here we go.
Yeah.
Then an accuser, a Me Too accuser, came out and said that he had forced her to have oral sex at the 2004 Democratic Convention in Boston.
Yeah.
Then we thought, and she, the reason that got taken so seriously is because she retained the same legal counsel as Dr. Blasey Ford.
But initially it wasn't taken super seriously and not because it shouldn't have been, but because the Washington Post had sort of looked into it.
Right.
At a certain point and sort of didn't like, really,
I don't know.
It wasn't really that they sort of wrote it off, but it was just that they, I think they didn't have basically like what they needed to be like, okay, well, this is like a giant story.
Right. But then, fortunately, on Friday, a second accuser came forward.
Yes.
And accused him of raping her in 2000.
2000.
When they were both students at Duke University.
Yeah.
He claims that both encounters were consensual. But both women said that they were willing to testify at impeachment proceedings against him, which brought into the world the possibility of impeachment proceedings, which now everyone is talking about, whereas before no one was talking about. Aside from the general horribleness of it, the optics are horrible because he's the only black person in any level of that echelon of leadership in Virginia.
Yeah.
And everyone else is currently embroiled in a blackface scandal. Right.
Well, and that's the thing, because like we're going to tell you about two, you know, we've already told you about the governor. We're going to tell you about two more blackface scandals.
Yeah, there's more blackface scandals to
come. It seems like everyone has coalesced around the idea that it's Justin Fairfax who should be the one who resigns right now. And it's and look, if he did do those things, then yes.
Yeah.
But until this all sort of like gets itself sorted out, it's not a good look to be sending all your ire in Justin Fairfax's direction.
It's confusing because clearly everyone in the nation is gripped with the idea that someone should fucking pay for all of this.
Right. Exactly.
Which is fair. Because everyone has done something wrong in the entire government.
Right.
But the sort of the press around who should resign is now, whereas early it was very Northam focused, is now sort of done a U-turn and headed to Justin Fairfax. And that includes, I mean, like everyone who's running for president has now called on him to resign.
Yeah.
Like the state party there, Tim Kaine, Terry McAuliffe, all the usual people.
Yeah. I'm sure Kirsten Gillibrand is.
Well, I
mean, she's.
She's.
Probably going to come in.
If she knows her brand.
I was going to say, yeah, exactly.
Then she will.
Yeah.
And even Ralph Northam said that if he did these things, he should resign, which is hilarious given the situation everyone's in right now.
Sure.
But part of the issue is, and, you know, we're going to get to why these stories broke when they did.
Yeah.
That the sort of top three levels of leadership are Democrats, and all of them have a scandal now, and so does the top Republican in the state.
Yeah.
So, because this was already bad enough that both the governor and the lieutenant governor were having these issues. But then the attorney general, Mark Herring, had to come out and get ahead of it because it was going to break at any moment.
Right. He didn't do blackface.
No, he wore brown makeup.
He did brown makeup.
That's right. At a 1980 college party for which he and his friends wanted to dress as rappers. When you see this man.
It's before Eminem existed.
When you see this man, you do wonder when the era of his rap fandom began. But it was 80s rap, so it was pretty like
I was gonna poppy. Say also was there rap in 1980?
I mean, that's a mystery that no one has solved so far in this, because rap feels very much like an 80s invention. But again, this is like, these are not high school like I think there's a world in which as a teenager you do tons of stupid shit, and especially if you live in a racist place like Virginia, where it's socially acceptable for white people to do blackface, you know, you might have done that. A lot of these people were too old for this.
Right, I know. Well, I had an interesting thought as all of this was playing out too, and also after I had talked to my friend who was like, yeah, that's what's going on there. And I don't even know that this necessarily takes place in Virginia, but it certainly is. I mean, that's what Dear White People is about.
Yeah. Yeah, it was about a blackface scandal. Party.
And obviously that was based in something.
Well, that was based on something that did happen at Harvard or Yale.
Right,
or
I know, because it's not even something that is relegated to Virginia
colleges,
from 40 years ago.
Colleges everywhere are having blackface parties still. That's a problem that goes on to this day and is why Dear White People is a show and a movie that exists.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if all of that wasn't bad enough, then we also discovered the only person who's not been personally accused of something but is oversaw something. Racism.
Right.
is the Senate Majority Leader, a Republican named Tommy Norman, who was in charge of a college yearbook that was just packed with random racism. Yeah. This was for the Virginia Military Institute, which is the same institution at which Ralph Northam had this page with his blackface photo.
Oh, boy.
And he was the managing, Tommy Norman was the managing editor of its 1968 yearbook.
Yep.
It was published just before VMI let in its first black students. So this is, at this time, an all-white institution, and not just all-white in the sense that there weren't black people, but there also weren't Jewish people. There weren't even people that we now would think of as white people.
Right.
So the yearbook has, you know, explicitly racist, you know, pejoratives. They use the N-word at least once. But they're also anti-Asian slurs. They're anti-Semitic slurs. It's slur central and photos of people in blackface, of course.
Yeah.
So now we're left with the question of who should step down?
Right.
Why should they step down? Should people step down? And Virginians seem fairly split over this, although I think that this is probably going to be, there's going to be some movement on these numbers as these stories continue to unfold, because it's gotten very confusing.
Yeah.
Here's what we know to be sure, though, which is that this all started because of an abortion bill.
That's right. If you're wondering why all of a sudden whoever dug up this
story, dug it up when they did,
Ralph Northam, I would assume they've been sitting on this photograph.
There's no way Oppo Research did not catch this photograph in the first go around. This is a southern state. They knew to look for blackface.
That's right.
But, and it was, my mom was the first person I heard who made this connection. She made it the day the Northam story broke. And it was because the day before, she had just read an op-ed about this abortion bill in the Virginia House. And she was like, they're having a big fight in Virginia right now about abortion. There's no way this isn't connected. And then after that, the media picked it up.
Yep.
So she's a real seer in that sense. Mm-hmm. But basically, so it was a conservative site called Big League Politics that first published Northam's photo. But he was already the center of their ire, because there is a House bill in Virginia that would roll back some of the state's abortion restrictions. That includes rolling back its 24-hour waiting period and requirements that second trimester abortions take place in a hospital. And then also, it reduces the number of doctors required to sign off on a third trimester abortion. That's late-term abortion for people that hate talking about abortion.
Right.
From 3 to 1. So it basically means that your doctor can believe your health is in danger and give you a late-term abortion.
Which is the only reason that
anyone gets those.
Anyone gets those.
And doesn't need to find two other doctors who are then going to be the target of right-wing rage to sign off on it.
Yeah.
So there's Northam is on the radio on Wednesday, the day that this story about this Virginia abortion bill broke, discussing it, and appearing to discuss what would happen if a child was born after a failed attempt at an abortion, a situation that doesn't occur. he said the infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired, and then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother. Some people who were trying desperately to find fault with Northam took his comments to mean that it's okay, that infanticide is legal under this bill.
Right, sure.
That's not how abortion works. That's not how pregnancy works.
No.
If somehow you fail to abort a baby in the third term, first of all, someone's health is in danger if you're doing a third trimester abortion.
That's right.
And it's probably the babies or the mothers.
Right.
But there's,
and Ralph Northam knows this
or both.
As a man who is a doctor, by the way.
He's familiar with doctoring. but this is also something you might know if you just like opened a biology book.
Sure.
Which is that if you are having issues with a pregnancy that could lead to both you or your baby or both of your deaths, then it is better to terminate the pregnancy than have everyone die.
Correct.
Usually babies that are aborted in third term abortions are not viable babies.
They're not viable. Right, that's the whole.
And so part of it is just, do you want to have to go through the trouble of giving birth to a non-viable fetus that you will then have to deal with all of the pain and the danger to a mother's health that goes along with delivering a baby?
Right.
Or, you know, the mother's health would be in danger if she tried to deliver it and the baby's not viable anyway.
Right.
Whatever it is, obviously a spokesperson for Northam told media that that was not what he meant to say, or that what he meant.
Yeah.
But the right kind of ran with it, and that's sets the stage for them suddenly releasing this treasure trove of fun for everyone.
For all of the Democrats, basically getting them down to the point where a Republican is going to be the governor.
Right.
In the
a Republican who, by
secession.
The way, has obviously posed in a blackface photo too.
Well,
but
that's
it's
thing.
Just that Republican constituents don't care about that kind of thing. There's a difference between, the reason this
you know
is a scandal
Northam,
for Democrats is because Democrats actually don't want you to have posed in blackface photos.
You know what Northam should have done? Was he should have said that he spent a lot of time talking to God.
Yeah.
And his Lord Jesus Christ, and asked for forgiveness.
That's right.
And
it works for Republicans every time.
And if they didn't accept that, then
played a greatest hits of every Republican on the history
who's ever
of
done anything.
Who's been tapping their foot in a bathroom since 1982.
That's right. Uh-huh.
You know, or you saying know, the same thing.
Right, exactly. I mean, or if, Mark Sanfording around with,
yeah,
the, you know,
with a mistress in Argentina using state funds.
To go to, yeah, right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's a long history of Republicans talking to God after doing something atrocious and then being fine.
That's right.
But apparently talking to God is only open to Republicans, so
that's the problem.
He is forced to pay a reckoning for his admittedly terrible behavior.
Yes, of course.
But this seems to be, like, the one thing we all know intuitively, like we often say that we understand something intuitively about Trump, which is that he is a man who uses the N-word.
Yes.
Just because it's not on video doesn't mean we don't all know
right,
it's
just
true.
Because there's an elusive tape out there that someone's right. been trying to find.
We know like that we don't need to see the tape. Right. We know it's true. This seems like a situation in which we also know intuitively that there is not a Republican with no record of this behavior in Virginia.
Say. So, well, and that's what I think.
We have to figure out a solution where somebody who is a Democrat can be the person who is in charge of Virginia,
well, right.
whether or not that person has done blackface.
Well, and that's why I think that you're seeing such a split here where
and that's what's confusing
seeing,
about it, yeah.
Where you're seeing, you know, nearly 60% of black people saying that Northam should not step down.
Yeah. Well, because is it better if a Republican takes over the
and
seat?
That's,
no,
that's
of course not.
It. And that's what I think, you know, and you and I were talking before the podcast about this, and while Franken obviously got the apology way more right than
yeah.
Northam did, it's similar in the sense that, okay, well, yes, those were both bad things that those guys did, but like, do they have a record of showing otherwise?
Right.
And would it be better to have them than
have
to
the opposite
have
of
the
them.
Opposition?
Yeah.
And I think those answers are super easy to answer.
Well, in Virginia, especially, because if this is how racist the behavior of the Democrats
yeah.
has been, then we know that the Republicans have been
right.
up to some real shenanigans.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean,
right.
I...
They're still actively racist.
Yeah. This
in
their
policies.
Policy is to be racist.
Right.
I think that one of the reasons that that they're kind of like trying to direct a lot of this ire at Justin Fairfax is then they can actually replace him. And then they could get rid of Northam if they wanted to. So the strategy, I think, with that might be...
That could be.
To bring in... Maybe bring
yeah.
a black woman in. Just to be safe.
Maybe.
You know that they haven't done blackface.
That's
you
right.
know that they haven't raped a woman. And if they have, that is quite a story. And we would all be entertained by that for months.
That's
we just,
terrible.
They're just things we can presume.
Yeah.
That we couldn't presume in any
yeah.
other case.
Yeah.
I had another, my mom had this idea too, which I thought was good, which was just let Danica Rome be the governor.
Oh.
You know, why not?
Sure.
They still get the comfort
yeah.
of people who don't believe that transgender is a thing get the comfort of a white man being the governor.
Right, they assume it's a man.
But
right.
everyone
yeah.
else gets the comfort of a woman being the governor who also probably isn't raping women.
God, Carla.
She gets it.
Man, she really is.
She's been on fire for this whole scandal.
On top of the story.
Yeah,
here.
This story she has been killing it on.
Yeah.
Now, moving on, buried in our third lead is it the State of the
oh,
Union.
Oh, yeah, there
happened.
Was the State of the Union.
You guys,
speech.
It was so long.
It was really long.
It was so boring.
Yeah, it was
so. It was
boring.
So boring that the kid that they brought to show off how terrible it is to be a Trump because you get bullied by kids fell asleep.
Right.
Yeah,
well, it's too late.
And,
well, there were photos of a lot of people who may or may not have been asleep.
Well,
I know Debbie Stabenow was really mad that people thought that she was asleep.
We
she
know.
Just, but certainly looked like she was asleep. And
always,
you know what? I don't care if she was.
No, I wouldn't blame her.
She's old and it was boring.
Yeah, I wouldn't blame anyone who was asleep for it because I felt sleepy.
Yeah.
Almost immediately and was really yeah. only, I mean, I love seeing who's going to clap and who's not going to clap.
Sure.
It's always interesting to see that Debbie Wasserman Schultz is actually like a radical conservative.
Oh, yeah.
She stands for everything that's wrong.
Yep.
She's like, she will be the only Democrat standing in a room full of Democrats staring and twiddling their thumbs.
Yep.
You know, wondering why there's clapping behind them. while Debbie Wasserman Schultz claps away for things like, you know, ending the Iran deal.
Yeah.
So in any case, the tone of it was weird because it kind of veered around really wildly. He tried a little poetry.
Yeah.
I mean, in the roses are red, violets are blue genre of poetry, not in the beautiful,
sure.
not even in the Sarah Palin genre of poetry, really.
No,
because
is...
it wasn't nonsensical slam poetry.
No.
It was like rhyming poetry that didn't make any sense and was
right.
kind of stupid.
Yeah.
But then there were also, you know, his usual talking points
right.
about all the things that he's angry about.
Yeah. I mean, if he would have removed just a couple things, like going after the investigations
right.
and stuff like that, it would have actually been, and I still think, actually, as far as like his ability to read, like, 80% sane, like, adjacent words,
right,
you know, written for him
by
on a teleprompter. That was probably the pinnacle of his speech giving.
Yes. Well, and you know what's interesting with him? Because the one moment
now, that's not a compliment.
No.
But
the one moment where I felt like he really worked the room was a moment where everyone was surreptitiously making fun of him, which was he made a comment about the high number of women in the workforce.
Yeah.
It got co-opted by Democratic women who started cheering because obviously they were also women in the workforce.
But he did have a line actually about how many.
Well,
which he was going to say anyway, I think, actually.
He was, because when he's delivering the speech, they start cheering, and he's like, well, you're really going to love what comes next.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He played the crowd really well.
He was there for the applause.
Yeah, I mean, this is his dream scenario.
He didn't care who it was coming from or why it was coming.
No, of course not. We did have to applaud one kid who was privately raising funds to treat kids' cancer, and then he told us we were going to defeat childhood cancer as one of his talking points, but then left no particulars that would indicate how. So apparently we're defeating childhood cancer by privately raising funds.
Well, right, yeah.
Which is what we're already doing, so no need for a plan.
This is another thing that he, you know, a lot of people were excited about, that he wants to end HIV in the next few years.
And it's we all want to end HIV.
We all want to do it. And also, like, A, you didn't tell us how. And B, you have been slashing any fund you can get your mitts at that would help do such a thing. So
well, of course.
I'm assuming that he's probably going to do it by, you know, having all of his religious right-wing minions go tell everybody that they
can't
have sex with each other.
Yeah. I do love that he tried to build unifying talking points around, like, things that are so abjectly ridiculous, like ending childhood cancer.
I know.
That, like, listen, we're not going to end childhood cancer. We might end people going bankrupt over childhood cancer.
Sure.
But ending childhood cancer isn't a thing. That's like ending the common cold. It's a thing that keeps... cancer is a lot of things. It's not just one thing. So it's a ridiculous talking point, especially when you don't indicate what part of the childhood cancer equation you're ending.
Right.
Ending HIV is the same thing. We could end it HIV, but he obviously doesn't actually know what it would mean to end HIV. And so that talking point is a ridiculous thing meant to make everyone clap, which he loves. The highlight of... I have a different takeaway from the night than everyone else in America who took away that photo of Nancy Pelosi doing a mocking side clap at him as he, you know, talked about bipartisanship.
Yeah.
Which was a great photo and great meme.
She's
really killing it at the meme game. I give her props for that. There was somebody that CNN cut to at one point who was on the GOP side and wearing an eye patch. And I welcome information about who it was.
Yeah.
Because I've been trying to figure it out for a while now. Who at one point turned to the guy next to him during one of those applaud lines that only Republicans were applauding for and said, I don't think that's right, but sure. And then started clapping. I'm the only person in America that caught that.
Yeah.
I don't know why my lip reading skills are that good. But it was very clear to me that he said that. And he also then shrugged, and the guy next to him shrugged, and then they just clapped wildly.
Yeah.
And I was like, that kind of sums up everything that's going on the right now.
Yeah, it does.
It's a guy shrugging to another guy saying, well, I don't think that's right, but sure. Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely, immigrants are terrible. You know, like, that's what this speech was.
Yeah. It was also oddly historical, too. There was so much, like, it began and ended with, like, they had so many former service people in there. They had people who had, you know, rescued people from Dachau, and then the people who were in Dachau were there, and they were sitting next to each other.
Holocaust survivors.
And there were, like, so many, like, sort of lovely moments like that. They had somebody
What else are you going to do?
They had somebody who had been, who had escaped the temple shooting,
in
Pittsburgh or whatever, and then the guy who had like run in there to like, you know, kill the
shooter
or whatever, and like I realize that those are sort of things that you do at the State of the Union, but like those took up a lot of time and were literally like, am I getting it like a World War II history lesson right now? Is that what this
you
state
were?
That I was, but it was like, but why
well,
was
and I also
I?
Was like,
why was I?
It always frustrates me when people who are like very squarely in the bullseye of the Trump administration's policy are like willing to go and be paraded around like that. Like, especially like the incidents of anti-Semitism have gone up something like 50% since he took office.
Right?
There has been a huge rise in hate crimes against Jewish people. Some of that is not related to Trump and is just related to other factors, I'm sure. But a lot of it is attributable to the fact that hate crimes in general have gone up.
Yes.
And that he in particular seems like someone who endorses a fairly anti-Semitic worldview, aside from moving the, you know, aside from Sheldon Adelson's view of what it is to be anti-
on both sides. Yeah.
And so it frustrated me to see so many people go and be trotted out that way. Especially, he didn't even give them such great introductions. A lot of the time, it was kind of hilarious to see him introduce like an Auschwitz survivor or whatever with like his casual, ridiculous tone.
Yeah.
And also very surreal to see the son of, well, let's call him a Nazi, doing that because Trump was basically a Nazi.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a draft dodger, so I mean, there's that. But he was also a Nazi, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, in a meaningful sense. So the whole thing was really kind of surreal.
Yeah.
In any case, Stacey Abrams gave the response.
Yeah.
That's a decision that came to us late in the game that we all supported.
Big time.
She was right.
Huge support.
She was the right choice.
She did an awesome job.
I can't believe Chuck Schumer made a right choice like that.
Right?
Because that...
I know.
He was the one who announced it, and it was shocking.
Yeah. Well, and they're apparently trying really hard to recruit her to run for a Senate seat,
which they should. That's perfect.
Which makes perfect sense. And I have just been, and I think I've even done it on this podcast, but I... Every time I look at a list of people who may or may not be running for president at some point this year, and I see Beto O'Rourke, and I see Andrew Gillum, who, yes, is black, but he's a man, there's others, too, that I'm not thinking of. It's littered with men who just lost an election, and nowhere on any list that anybody has ever produced anywhere for potential 2020s is Stacey Abrams, and she damn near flipped Georgia blue statewide
for
the first time ever, and probably would have had everybody been able to actually vote properly.
Correct.
So
there's sort of an understanding that she actually did win that race.
Yeah, and there were she was really good.
Yeah.
I mean, it was short and sweet, but it was to the point. But she was like likable, but she also went after him, and like you can see why she's a thing.
Yeah.
And people the very next morning were just like, should Stacey Abrams be running for president? And look, I don't even really think that I want Stacey Abrams to run for president because, I'm not convinced that I'm totally there with her on everything.
I also don't want just these random people who just lost races to run for president on the whole.
Yeah, but, I was elated that, people were finally just like, oh, right, Stacey Abrams is a person who could be president. Yes, she is.
Yeah, if Beto O'Rourke is a person who can be president, Stacey Abrams is a person who could be his president.
That's right.
She's like 10 times more a thing that makes sense.
Yeah. So don't run, but let's live in a world where she could if she wanted to.
Right. Well, and also don't run, but also if every idiot's running, run. Why not? If Beto O'Rourke is running for president, go ahead and run. I would rather that she be the president than Beto O'Rourke.
Ditto.
So, at least. Yeah. And I think she's the kind of person that would be a smart VP choice.
Probably so.
I think Liz Warren is kind of tailoring her for that, actually, which does sort of fit into my Tammy Duckworth genre of person. She's a little more conservative than we are and a little more conservative than Liz Warren is, but she is a really engaging speaker who can bring people into the fold.
She solves some of Warren's other problems, too.
Yes, exactly.
Which, the far left white vote has always had trouble courting people of color. It's just an ongoing struggle. It's not a recent struggle.
We didn't make that up last year.
No.
And I think also kind of adds, Liz Warren has a very specific kind of charisma, but Stacey Abrams adds a more traditional charisma to the ticket, too.
Yeah, I agree.
So someone like Stacey Abrams would be a great choice for
100%.
One of the people who is one of the big money candidates to think about,
someone
like her would run.
If we get saddled with someone as our candidate, like Joe Biden, which I pray
to
daily
all
doesn't
the places.
Happen. But I mean, like, that then, she starts to make sense for sort of like a lot of the shitty options.
Yes, absolutely.
Of people who could win.
I think a candidate, like, the reason that
or
she
Or any
would,
old white guy, even if it's Sanders.
She makes
good sense.
The reason that someone like Stacey Abrams runs for president is to be in the VP slot. Because and that's it. Honestly, I know we don't talk about that with the men who are in her situation, but that's what Beto O'Rourke is up to, too. The man's not going to be the president.
Too.
He could maybe be the vice presidential candidate if someone's looking for youth. But that's not... And white guide him, But he's not going to be the president because he's a nobody. And that would be true of Andrew Gillum.
Right. And he's also awful, by the way.
These are people that lost races that because they're available because they don't have jobs. So, some of the people that are going to draw the big donors in are going to be, are in the Senate right now, have access to the money, have access to the DNC sort of apparatus.
Yeah.
These other people are running to be in the game.
Yeah.
Because some of them would make okay VP choices.
Totally.
So if Beto's going to be there, I think she should be there too. Everyone should be there.
Yep.
We should all run for president.
That's right.
And if we do it.
And we mostly are.
Let's
all run
for only president. Do it once. Let's only announce the first time.
Oh, man.
More on that later. Before we do that, though, we want to talk a bit about the Green New Deal.
Yeah. It's here and it's glorious.
Oh, my God. You guys, first of all, I know we were told by AOC herself not to expect too much on the policy side or on the legislative side because freshman congresspeople do not get a chance to really introduce legislation. And she's right. That's usually why it takes a long time and there's some sort of a hierarchy to it in the House and in the Senate where, you know, you don't get your name on legislation. Some people take your legislation from you sometimes and use it as their own. I mean, the reason that Kirsten Gillibrand is a thing is because as a freshman senator, she got legislation with her name on it passed.
Right.
That's why she's a thing. That's why her constituents actually still really like her.
Yeah.
And why, I mean, we found her office to be really effective to work with on, you know, in my other work. But that is a really rare phenomenon.
Sure.
And it seems to be something that only someone as unassuming as a young woman can accomplish.
Right.
Because, first of all, she got Ed Markey from Massachusetts to co-sponsor this
Senator.
In the Senate. Because they
need... He's an old schooler.
White guy.
For a while.
So she got sort of someone with some Senate gravitas, because in the Senate they care a lot about, you know, how important old white men are. But she got someone with some Senate gravitas to be the co-sponsor in the Senate, and got a ton of really great co-sponsors onto the House bill. And there's great... everyone who's running for president...
Yep.
is co-sponsoring the Senate bill because you have to. It's basically a litmus test for whether you should be allowed to run for president.
Yep.
Even Adam Schiff.
Right.
Our former blue dog, kind of mediocre congressperson here.
That's right.
Has endorsed it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how much people are endorsing it.
Yeah.
Everyone but Nancy Pelosi.
Right.
Who called it...
the Green Dream or whatever it is they're calling it.
She's going to have to get her life together.
She really is. You know, she's...
Voters think this is a great idea.
She has done some good things.
Mm-hmm.
Of late, that we can applaud her for. I mean, she's certainly
handed... But policy-wise...
Exactly.
She's still mediocre.
I feel like... I read a story last week where she told insurance executives not to worry about Medicare for All.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, she'll sell us up the river if it suits her.
Yeah, and it will suit her.
I mean, and it will suit her.
Because she's a fundraiser.
Right.
And that's what being a fundraiser is. In any case, what's great about this legislation is it's really sweeping in a way that brings in a lot of our concerns on the social welfare front.
Right.
And that is why it kind of, it's something that covers every one of the major policy talking points that the left has been sort of touting.
Yes, and I think that's what has everyone on the far left and
real
progressives
excited
about this, and Greens for that matter, is that it really sort of it's a 180 from what we've been doing. And look, under the Trump administration, we haven't been doing anything.
Right. But it's a 180.
Besides going backwards. But even from previous administrations, because look, the neoliberals have been focused just like the Republicans have. I mean, the Republicans don't believe it exists, but the Republicans who do believe it exists, everybody wants to have market-based and technology solutions to do this.
Right.
And it's all going to pay for itself, and we're not... And,
we don't
know,
have to do anything.
The private sector is going to figure out ways to make all of these changes, and, like, it's just going to... It's going to come when it comes, and, like, you know, like, once it becomes... Once it makes more sense financially to, you know, retrofit our homes with, you know, solar panels or whatever it is, then, then it'll just happen. And the far left, for a long time, has been being like, that... is not fucking working. And this document says it outright.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's got so many co-sponsors, because, like, basically some of the people who have co-sponsored this are people who previously endorsed something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
So it really, I think the most exciting thing about this, even if this ends up from here, if it dies today, which it won't, because it's got so many co-sponsors.
It's the most exciting thing that's happening in Washington right now.
It would still have been a step in the right direction because it's an acknowledgement that we're doing it wrong.
Yeah. And it also connects some of the issues that I think in a neoliberal approach you are not forced to address, which are the real issues that climate change is a problem.
Right.
Climate change is not just a problem because we love to, you know, we love the world so much because the earth matters so much. It's a problem because people suffer when the climate changes.
And the people who suffer are often the people who are sort of, have not done anything contributed the least, and also who are the most vulnerable people, you know?
Right.
I mean, one of these Well, first, we'll tell you a little bit about what's in it specifically. Right. So it sets out goals, some specific projects, and also requirements for bills that do come up for them to be sort of like considered as part of the Green New Deal. So the goal, there's five goals, and they are achieving net zero greenhouse emissions, creating jobs,
improving U.S.
infrastructure and industry, providing for a just transition.
That to me is the biggest one. Because
yeah, there's a lot about justice in here, yeah. Social justice and
and that
justice
is so connected to the climate movement, and no one
justice.
In the sort of moderate
right.
party ever talks
exactly.
about it.
Yeah. And the last one is securing clean air and water. Some of the specific projects, there's more of those, so we
right.
won't tell you all of them. But some of them are decarbonizing electricity, transportation, and industry, restoring ecosystems, upgrading buildings, updating electricity grids. So those are sort of like the specific things that would be a part of this that need to be accomplished, you know.
Right, as part of this process.
Right. And then some of the specific requirements are basically just like what, if you're going to offer up a bill, this bill has to meet all of these requirements. And again, there's a lot of these as well. So just some highlights are guaranteeing a job with a family-sustaining wage, adequate family and disability leave, paid vacations, and retirement security to all people of the United States. So it can't take away from any of those things, and it has to add to like that. Strengthening and protecting the right of all workers to organize, unionize, and collectively bargain free of coercion, intimidation, and harassment.
So it draws a connection between labor and the sort of
yeah.
protecting labor in this
right.
process.
Well, and that is sort of like one of the things that has always been difficult about, you know, the environmental movement is that it's a fine line in that if you want to do all of these things, like there are, it does affect people's jobs and
right.
it does affect labor, and you sort of have to, it's, you have to thread a needle
well,
a little
it's,
bit,
it's,
and it's not easy, and this does a really good job of that, where it's just, it's not.
Yeah, and it also wards off the kind of criticism that allows a lot of right-wing talking points to win in places where they stand to lose jobs over this sort of thing. So if you're wondering why coal is always such a big obstacle
right.
to getting anywhere on the environment,
yeah.
it is because they are fairly afraid of losing
right.
employment
well,
in a dying industry where
yeah,
they
exactly.
already are losing employment.
And that's why one of the five goals, there's only five stated goals. One
right.
of them is providing for a just transition.
Right.
So
because
it's like, we're not going to screw you if you're in
a
fossil
field that's
fuel
gonna disappear.
Industry.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And
yeah.
that is that having stating that outright is good because it sort of plays offense instead of defense on that talking
Correct.
Point. And Republicans use that talking point
all
the
time
to justify not doing anything or to even move back. I mean, the Trump administration is using it right now to move backwards.
Right. To,
you know,
have
to
really
to promote
go all in
coal.
On coal. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. And
yeah.
and that's, we should make sure that people who work in coal regions can eat.
Right. Exactly.
you know, have
yes.
jobs.
Yes.
Like,
exactly.
That, obviously.
Yeah. Another one is ensuring a commercial environment where every business person is free from unfair competition and domination by domestic or international monopolies. So it's breaking up monopolies,
yeah.
Which is great. Providing all members of society with high quality healthcare, affordable, safe, and adequate housing, economic security, and access to clean water, air, healthy and affordable food, and nature.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, that's everything.
Does that all sound great, guys?
Yeah. Well, no, it's... Like I said, it's so perfect because it finally sort of coalesces why we care about the environment into
right.
a thing where we can all understand what the connection is
well,
to our lives.
Well, and that's what I think is, yeah, that you're right. That's huge because I think this sort of shows that this is important beyond that we're just like, you know, worried about, you know, whether our swamplands are still going to be there.
Right.
Like, it's about people's lives, and this adversely affects them, and we have to do something about it, not just to save the planet, but to make sure that people are healthy and can
right. have a nice, good quality of life.
Right, exactly.
And that's, I think that is maybe where the environmental movement has not done a good job of connecting to the average voter. Because this is something that we know about
100%
about the
so.
Benefits of protecting the environment.
Yep.
But I think the way it gets framed is as sort of like a luxury movement where people want to stop you from doing fun stuff or
yep.
stop you from making money or stop you from having an adequate living
yep.
because they care so much about being able to go see trees.
Right.
And that is not what the environmental
That's
movement is
not
about.
It. Yeah.
The reason that we care about the environment is not because we love looking at trees so much. It is because
right.
caring about the environment improves everyone's quality of life.
Yeah. If you've listened to this podcast for the last few years.
You know that I don't fucking like trees at all.
I was going to say, you know that Lila and I aren't trying to be in nature.
Not at all. Not even once.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
So it's not about that.
No. That is not why you pursue any sort of policy for us, is so no. that we can frolic in nature. We don't want to be anywhere near nature. No. Like, it's like if you talk about saving the bees, I'm like, I am all for saving the bees. I don't want to be near a bee. Right. I want no bees in my vicinity. Yeah. But I'm happy to do that because it affects our food supply and it affects, you know, our air supply. You know, it ends up having ripple effects that actually do affect me.
Yeah.
That's what environmental, you know, justice is about.
Yeah.
In any case. So we're very into the fact that this has such a major focus on justice.
Yes.
And that the sort of smaller ways in which we're all taught that the environment, you know, that we have to adjust our behavior for the environment are not overshadowed by the fact that, you know, for a lot of people, making the kinds of small lifestyle adjustments that would benefit the environment are not as feasible as they are for those of us with the means to do it. And also don't have as big a bang for your buck if you're not even consuming anything as it would be if, you know, we had a large scale project where, you know, where like big corporate farms were having to adhere to these rules and where larger or, you know, when you can make larger investments in these things and make policy that broadly applies to people, then you're not taking away quality of life items from people who can least afford to spare stuff.
Yeah.
You're making it so that everyone can participate in changing the culture of consumption and changing, you know, how we deal with the environment.
Yeah. And the other thing that I'm excited about in this is that, and this is really sort of like having a moment in sort of like pop culture right now, sort of, or at least political culture.
Political pop culture.
Political pop culture is that they are very open about the fact that this is going to cost some money and we are going to have to invest in it and the government is going to have to do it. You know, the stance of the whole sort of like market-based and technology situation that we've been sort of adhering to for a while is that it really sort of like made investment from the government like a taboo thing. Mm-hmm. Like, ooh, we're going to have to pay for it. We're going to have to spend some money on this. No, we can't do that because the market will just correct it. And like, they are sort of like upfront. That's like, no, the government is going to have to do something. And there have, I feel like, been a lot of moments, and maybe they're only happening in my sphere on the left, but I like, I've noticed them more in the last year, I would say. Just is that this is a very pro-government bill.
Yes.
And we
haven't been pro-government.
We haven't been pro-government. And I think that that is something that the Democrats have feared to be because, you know, I mean, it was, wasn't it Clinton that was like the era of big government is over or whatever? But like, you know, this has to be a big government deal here. The New Deal was, and the Green New Deal also has to be.
Yeah.
And I think that I like that we're getting back to like where it's sort of not as terrible. And of course the Republicans will hit on it. So I mean, like, we still have a way to go.
Of course.
But like, just being able to be like, no, the government is actually the only thing that can do this.
Right. That's why we have one.
Private industry cannot do this. Technology cannot do this. Wall Street cannot do this. Just everyday people cannot do this. You know, one of the things that I have sort of like loathed about the sort of most recent environmental movement, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't be doing these things, but just like, there's so many things that like individual people can be doing. Like, oh, we're not going to have straws anymore.
We don't have any bags anymore.
Yeah. And it's like, and like, I'm not saying that we should just like be, you know, chucking millions of plastic bags into the ocean because we shouldn't be. But like, those things are also not going to fix it either. And I think that people need to know that too.
Yeah.
And so, like, we need a big thing. Well, and it's not carrying around your metal straw with you.
No, and this is what I'm talking about also when it comes to justice. One of the things about those personal approaches to saving the environment is they're accessible to middle-class white people.
That's what I was going
to
say.
They're accessible to the rich.
Right.
But they're not...
Only people that you and I know in Los Angeles...
Only people of means can afford to do these things.
Right, exactly.
And frankly, depending on where you live, only people of means can afford to eat a certain way.
Right.
You know? I mean, only people of means can have access...
Have clean water.
Right. Have access to, to organic foods that they can actually afford to buy.
Right.
Have access to, you know, have the ability to maybe, depending on where they live, eat a fully plant-based diet because those aren't the options that are available where they live. And they're, you know, when you think about what kinds of foods are available that aren't plant-based or that are, you know, that are plant-based in a lot of environments, it's just like a lot of like fillers with soy and bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're... it is so sort of, it's so kind of unconscionable to put that responsibility onto the people that have the least when the government is not doing anything to invest in this process at all. And then also, one thing that I think has been misunderstood and is maybe sort of like something that we can now talk about is when the government makes investments like this, private industry does benefit. Because someone has to make the shit. The government isn't in the manufacturing business.
No.
So when we talk about government investment, we're not talking about, well, the government's just socializing everything. We're talking about the government investing in businesses and technologies that other people will have to make and start.
Correct.
And that is good for everyone.
Right.
That's why when the government put everyone back to work during the during the original New Deal, that kickstarted the economy so that people could then go do other things. Right. You know, you can't start a business if you don't have any money.
Yeah.
You can't start a business in a marginal field where the technology is not quite there unless you have some backup, you know, and if you're somebody who has access to a technology but doesn't have the resources to invest in it yet, you need someone to do that for you.
Yeah.
You know, that's, and why, you know, I've been going on a lot of these big ideas recently, like money's not real. Why do we have a government if we're going to just let a crisis eat us alive and we're all going to die in a flood or a fire or a polar vortex or whatever, and we're not going to do anything about it? Why bother having a government?
Yes.
We could all just be, I mean, right now we're basically living without a government. And as much as everything is terrible, everything is also kind of like as terrible as it was when this whole process started.
Yeah.
Like we don't need a government if the government is not going to provide a basis for collective action on things.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of having one.
Yep.
That's why we live in societies and don't just live in the forest and shoot each other all the time.
Yeah.
But a half of America, I guess, is doing that. So I don't know. In any case, this is not a piece of legislation, the Green New Deal.
Right.
It is an outline.
Yes. It doesn't say where we're going to get this money. It doesn't offer specific actual legislation that anybody can vote on. It's basically, you know, it's guidelines to, it's state some goals and a few specific things that we could do to meet those goals, and some requirements for bills that if they get brought up, you know, to have to meet to be able to be a part of this.
Right.
But like, it's not that. So, you know, everybody's, well, how are we going to pay for it? Although that's, I'm annoyed with that question. And I'm glad we're starting to talk about that too.
Yeah,
because
I don't care.
And it's
tax rich people.
Isn't it amazing how much of this, like what we're talking about in politics right now is like happening because of AOC?
I know.
And it's like, I almost hesitate to give her too much credit, but like, I don't know who else to give the credit to.
Well, I can think of people to give the credit to, but all of them are part of this. I mean,
I think
you know, the idea of stating ideas is something that really Bernie Sanders was the only person who did, you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was only because we all finally figured out who he was that we realized that voters actually like it when you have ideas.
Yeah.
This is an idea.
It's an idea.
We didn't use it. The reason that the neoliberal approach is so vague is because they were afraid of having an idea because then someone could be against the idea.
Right.
This is all ideas and no details, which is where I want my ideas to start.
Yes.
Because you can't.
You have to think of the idea.
Come up with a plan with no idea.
Okay.
And that's, we've been doing that at this point. I mean, we do it in healthcare. We do it when it comes to infrastructure. We do it with education. We have been coming up with plans without having any ideas.
Yeah.
And she's really the only person right now who has the kind of platform that she has, who is in Congress being like, what if we had ideas?
Right.
And I'm a freshman. You tell me how we're going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what do I fucking care?
Yeah.
But I mean, like, I think that idea, the idea just to have ideas.
Yeah.
Is like, you know, the idea to just have a meeting instead of a meeting about a meeting.
Right.
It's like not something we were familiar with.
Right.
It's not how the government worked. And
yeah.
It's not certainly how, I mean, part of the issue they have now is that they have people in there who don't seem that worried about donors. They have a bunch of really angry younger women who are just like, fuck all of this. My constituents want this.
Yep.
So bring it on.
Yep.
And it turns out all voters want this.
Right.
The problem we're having is that the money doesn't want this. They don't like it when you have ideas, the money people.
Right.
Because ideas are expensive.
Yeah.
And they don't want to remind everyone that they just got a huge tax cut.
Right.
Although that is going terribly because everyone is finding out that their taxes went up this year.
Yeah.
And like nobody is happy about it.
Right. And this is going to be one of the better years of your tax
mm-hmm.
cut,
That's
by
right.
the way.
So yeah.
if your taxes
Meanwhile,
went way up this year, then
sorry about
settle
it.
In for the next couple.
Yeah,
because
you're never getting any better. Buying food again. Meanwhile, Netflix paid nothing in taxes last year.
Yeah.
So in any case, I think that the plan to just have an idea is something that she is like the only person who is having it at the moment.
Right.
And it's like spreading because everyone's suddenly like, oh, wait, why did I get into politics if to not have ideas?
Right.
What was my plan before that?
Yeah.
It's also been great because, like we said last time, AOC is basically determining who gets to run for president and what they think.
Exactly. Yeah, because she's got co-sponsors. Harris has signed on as one. Warren has, Booker has, and Gillibrand has.
Right.
Basically, all of those senators.
The big four.
Amy Klobuchar has said that she's going to sign on.
What's his face? Mayor?
Buttigieg,
right? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Has endorsed it.
Excuse me, has endorsed it. Sanders has previously endorsed it. I don't know that he, like, has recently done
right,
so.
But he's the original endorser of this
right,
kind of thing.
Say, yeah, exactly.
And also close enough politically to the Greens actually thought of this idea. They've been touting a Green New Deal for years.
Sure. Well, and that's the other thing is too that I feel like the money really sort of pushed this aside a while ago. Because
yeah.
You're right, this was not a new, you know,
this is not a new idea.
I read The Green Collar Economy probably a decade ago that Van Jones wrote, mm-hmm. who is not an insane person,
right.
who was very briefly in the Obama administration, who is not a person who is, you know, anything other than a neoliberal himself.
Right.
So these ideas have been there.
Yeah.
So
if you were someone who wasn't so angered by the Green Party just existing as a party in the last presidential race, you would be familiar with the term Green New Deal because
right.
they exactly. have been talking about it for years.
Yeah.
So but that's what I'm saying. Like, it took someone who wasn't afraid to have an idea
right.
to be like, hey, here's an idea.
Right.
It's not like AOC yeah. didn't think of this.
Right.
And that's fine.
No, it's definitely
fine. You pick up the ball where you can get it and you yeah. move it as far as you can.
That's
I mean,
right.
but Castro hasn't said anything about it,
nope.
which is one of the many problems that Castro is having because he hasn't said anything about anything and also has spent $0 on digital ads. So we wouldn't know if he had said anything.
I'm wondering if maybe, you know, we already saw, and I realized that Castro is sort of like a bigger name than this, but we saw that guy who ran for Congress in West Virginia who like had announced that he was running for president. He's already dropped out.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about how there's going to be 20 people running in this primary. There may very well not be 20 people
when we vote
on the ballot come time
yeah,
the Iowa caucus rolls around. Because you don't have to lose an election to drop out of a presidential race.
No.
I mean, the money stops coming in, your campaign is on the fritz, your anything, you know.
We've learned
I mean,
anything from Lincoln Chafee. It's that you can leave anytime.
That's right. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if the other person who hasn't weighed in is Tulsi Gabbard. And we were reading all of last week about how her campaign is in shambles.
Right.
So, you know, she may drop out too. Beto O'Rourke isn't even in at this point, and he hilariously endorsed the idea, like, of the idea.
Yeah.
So he's
a man who wants to meet about a meeting.
That's right.
He wants to meet about it so that later they can meet more about it.
Yes. Bingo.
And so in the last couple weeks, Cory Booker has finally announced in an ad where he tries to seem cool, but then what he did was spend all day Instagram living himself at various TV appearances. And it's just, here's the thing. And should it matter? No. But he doesn't know how to hold the camera right, and so he just looks fat on camera.
He needs a Kardashian to show him how to.
And he knows one, I'm sure, because
he
loves to schmooze celebrities. That's his thing.
Yeah.
So just like, don't hold the camera from below. It's not rocket science. You're trying to look like you're fit enough to survive the presidential race, and you're not doing it. And I'm sorry that that's how we're judging people, but you're on Instagram, which is the only place where this is important.
Yeah.
So just fucking figure that out.
Yeah.
He's trying to AOC his way around, but is not good at it.
He's not good
and
at it.
And it's too bad, because I can see why he's trying to, because he does have that same sort of, like, down-home-ish charm.
I was
going to
say, charm. He has charm.
He's
yeah, so, like,
famous for being that kind of personable
charming.
Guy
that's
who, like, you know, shovels your walk.
That's right.
But it's not currently working out that way for him.
Yeah.
Amy Klobuchar finally announced today,
yeah.
Even though all week we've been hearing reports that her staff hates her and she couldn't find a campaign manager, and then she announced in a snowstorm.
Yeah.
And, I mean,
the signs are not there.
Don't Amy run for Klobuchar. President, Amy Klobuchar.
You know, I was talking to somebody who is a friend of mine who is a little bit more of a moderate than I am, and we get in arguments a lot of times, and I sort of assumed that Amy Klobuchar would be just the type of that he would get on board
by any
for.
Measure
and
be
he,
politically what he's looking
right,
for.
Right, and he messaged me, and he was like, I'll tell you what, I've never been less excited about anybody than Amy Klobuchar. And, you know, and I said the same thing, because, like, I can, like I said, I can do some mental gymnastics
mm-hmm.
and make a case for Cory Booker, and certainly I can make a case for Elizabeth Warren, and I could probably figure out a case for Kirsten Gillibrand.
Yeah.
I could even make
a
case
for
Joe Biden, who I don't particularly care for, and even Beto, who I do not like. Like, I get just sort of like in the cult of personality realm,
right.
and
what's
I could
here.
See him winning an election against
right.
Donald Trump. I cannot get my brain
no.
to tell me why Amy Klobuchar is running for president.
I can't either.
And I've racked it, because
yeah.
she's been on lists for a long time. I
We're talking about a woman who had
one
moment of pop culture glory during the Kavanaugh hearings and has otherwise been unnoticed by everyone.
Right. And I'm not saying that she might not be a perfectly competent person.
Not at all.
But, like, I just don't know what case that she makes.
What does she bring that no one's bringing here?
Yeah. Right, exactly.
And, like, she's not famous for being a fantastic speaker. She's not famous for some sort of sudden win that no one can understand.
Yep.
She's just a person in the Senate.
Right.
She's a senator. Yes. She's one of the many senators.
Right. One of the 100.
One of the 100 senators that we have. Mm-hmm. She's a member of the Senate, and that is what makes her special. Right. And that's pretty special.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I guess being mean makes her special because she's from Minnesota, so I just assumed that she was nice.
I know.
The only interesting thing I know about Amy Klobuchar is that she might be a bitch.
That's literally the only information that anyone has at this point. Like, and that is another sign that maybe you just don't worry about it. Because she's not going to bring splashy policy to the scene. And at this point, you know, in another year, that might have been fine. But in this year, you need some splashy policy. You need to be someone who's like, not only am I a responsible adult,
right,
but here's a fun thing, I think.
Right.
No, you know.
Or I'm a likable human that you might want to vote for.
Right.
Like
that. And she also, I think there's something also sort of unfashionable about her that harkens too much to a Clinton-esque run where you're 100%. Just like, oh, here's another middle-aged white lady who is never going to seem likable enough. And sure enough, all we know about her is she's not even likable in the actual sense.
Yep.
Hillary Clinton is at least a nice person in the sort of person-to-person sense.
Yeah.
No one on her staff says that she like screams at them and like fires them at will and shit. You know.
Well, and I think that there's the more people that announce, and you and I were talking about this before we started recording, but the more people that announce, I can sort of, I feel like, if I look into my crystal ball, which is pretty good.
Yeah, Brent's good at this, you guys.
He's famously
good at this.
You can sort of start to see why some of these people are running. Because I think what you're going to start to see pretty soon is that there's going to be some sort of, like, individual primaries within the Democratic primary happening. Because you're going to see Amy Klobuchar and potentially a Joe Biden and maybe Beto O'Rourke.
And some of these boring governors who might run.
Hickenloopers. Right, exactly. Yes. They're going to be in some sort of like generic human sort of
let's grab
moderate,
a swing voter primary.
Pretending to be a progressive who gets things done.
Right.
If you will.
Right.
Ugh, God. primary.
Right.
And one of them is going to come out of that probably. Toward the end. And then you're going to have the sort of Elizabeth Warren and the Bernie Sanders and the whoever else sort of like thinks that they can play in that lane. Right. Maybe sort of Tulsi Gabbard, but like I don't think at this point
you're
going to
see her anywhere.
I don't either. And then
the inspirational candidate.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And like someone like
the Gillibrand, Harris, Booker lane.
Right. And the thing that sort of like
the trendy people
continues to make the most sense about Harris is that while I know she's got some problems with the far left, is that I think that she's, at least so far, has done a decent enough job at pretending to be both of those people. And she's also a woman and a person of color.
Right.
So, like, if I had to, like, look down coming out of, like, coming out of Super Tuesday, it's going to be, like, Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, and Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
And if it's not those people,
then it's
going to be a version of that person.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I agree with you totally. When you said that, I was like, we know.
Right.
We now know.
And in that sense, depending on who, you know, hasn't yet announced, then, you know, maybe Amy Klobuchar somehow makes it out of the boring person primary.
But that person is not going to be the candidate this year.
The winner of the boring person primary loses to
the trendy person.
Either the trendy person
or the far left person.
Yeah.
And I think that you basically at some point we're going to, unless something crazy happens, she's going to be an early disappearance because
no one
already knows who she is.
Yeah. I think she does something in Iowa because she's from nearby, but
I have a prediction about what this primary, the later primary is going to be.
Yeah.
It's going to be Joe Biden. It's going to be Kamala Harris. And it's going to be Liz Warren, I think. I don't think Bernie Sanders is going to be the one.
I don't know. But
either way, I think you're right that that's the three camps.
Those are the camps.
Yeah, and especially when you start.
And that battle, I could go on for a while because I think they all do well in different
places. Well, and we tend to really settle on a three candidate primary.
Sure. No, I had two
eventually.
Last time. But
well, no, but Martin O'Malley stayed in a
well,
while.
That's true. He did.
And it just was, he wasn't offering anything.
No, he was, he would be, because he would fall in the same category this year as like the Bookers.
Exactly.
Sort of like trying to be like
the
a personality
category.
And trying to be like a fake progressive.
I'm calling
type
them the trendy
candidate.
Category.
I'm in that.
Yeah.
I'm into that.
I think I think also if that was a weird year because there was like someone who was like an actual behemoth and then like an actual surprise candidate.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
This year we
They're
have so many
quantities.
People. Everyone's a known quantity. All of them have roughly the same record. A lot of them are offering the same things. So it's the people are interchangeable within the mini primaries to some extent. Some of them will play better outside of the mini primary than others.
Yes.
But either way, Amy Klobuchar is not winning the mini or the major primary.
Right.
She's a person who shouldn't bother running for president. A lot Correct. Of these people, I think, bring something to the table.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, to some degree, maybe in the debate phase, Klobuchar brings something to
maybe.
The table.
Well, and that's why I think, because I still feel like, I mean, I, as much as I love Liz Warren, I don't know. This whole thing with the her own handwriting, writing Native
that
American
was already,
with the bar
we knew
thing.
About
we
this.
No, we didn't.
No, we knew, but...
but we knew, I mean,
we
like...
We knew about right. this in the... like, we knew that right. she had already said this. It doesn't matter. Yeah. It being in her right. handwriting or not, it doesn't change the story ultimately.
But it's like, it's gonna... If it's gonna continue to be a story, then that's a problem for her. But regardless, what I think about her is that, like, she should stay in until the last
the
dying
bitter
second.
End. Yeah.
Because she, more than anyone in this, even... Probably Sanders has the most policy specifics and clear-eyed view of what it is that she is trying to do and a reason for why she was running and is able to explain it to people better than anyone. Well, so it's like, I just want her to continue to be on a debate stage and in candidate forums until basically the day of the presidential election, even if she's not the damn nominee.
That's honestly why I think that she will be the left candidate. I know that, I mean, this is like an annoying story that keeps coming back.
Right.
I think that as it goes on and Trump sort of goes after different ones of them, we're going to see more of these.
Yeah.
And this is not going to be the only one of these kinds of stories.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, and then also there's going to be stories with the left. This is not as much a story with the left as it's just a stupid thing she did. It's not Kamala Harris's record as Attorney General or as, you know, it's not, there are going to be things.
Yeah.
But she is going to be the one of those leftern candidates who has the clearest vision. She's going to be the one on the stage with the clearest vision and the best ability to explain that vision.
Right.
And I don't, you know, she might not be the candidate, but she is someone who I think...
She's releasing policies out the wazoo
right
now.
She knows that her role is to start the policy game, and they're not going to be able to keep up with her policy game.
No.
And so I suspect that she will be able to win a kind of voter over that is an unexpected kind of voter that is not just the like get swept up in the message Sanders voter,
correct,
but is a progressive voter who was the kind of person who said, but Hillary Clinton has plans. He has ideas, but she has plans.
Yes.
That voter is going to vote for Liz Warren if they are paying attention.
No, I agree.
And so I think that she actually has like kind of broader appeal on that end, assuming all of this assuming that other scandals break that are confusing to people enough that they're just like, we got to stop worrying about these scandals.
Yeah.
Because we're already in a world where this scandal is not as important as the scandal of everyone in Virginia government having blackface all over them.
Not.
You know, there's going to be like so many of these things going on that I think by the end of this cycle, we're going to sort of be like, what are we supposed to do about these?
Yeah.
And I don't think the answer is going to be these people can't be political.
Well,
and
I think
anymore.
Once she's.
But she bungled
sort of
that, so she's going to have to figure out what she wants to do
I
about
think
that.
Once
you know?
She can explain it to a national audience, I think that like she'll
she
be able
to.
She
seems
to
be workshopping it now, and
she'll
she has
be able to make it go away.
Not gotten there,
no,
but
she
is workshopping it, certainly.
And it's still early, so that's okay.
No, exactly.
But it's going to be fun.
I know. I'm so excited about all. This is going to be fun unless all of my favorite candidates drop out immediately and we're left with a field roughly like what we always see.
Yeah.
And our best choice is an Edwards-esque progressive. Oof. By the way, my mom said to me the other day, and I've already given you the answer, so you're not going to be able to play this game with us.
Okay.
But all she just out of the blue was like, I was playing this game with my friend. Who was John Kerry's running mate? And I sat and thought about it for like 10 minutes and could not figure it out.
Oh, wow.
And she was like, we did the same thing. Like, if you are a person who didn't just hear the name John Edwards said by me minutes ago, and someone apropos of nothing asked you who John Kerry's running mate is, I guarantee you would not be able to come up with that answer quickly.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's because we all just like collectively decided to forget about him. Like, we were all just like too embarrassed about the whole thing.
John Kerry?
No, not John Kerry. John Edwards.
John Edwards.
I mean, I'm embarrassed about
John Kerry, a person who is on lists of people who might be running for
president.
I
barely remember John Kerry's candidacy in the first place.
Yeah, well, it was terrible.
Let alone, I remember that that year the RNC was in New York City. That's all I remember about his candidacy. And I remember people dressed up as dolphins outside of, there's a big union on the corner that I live on. I'm in New York. And I remember people outside dressed as dolphins and with signs that said flip-flopper.
Similar to 2016. 2004 was a year where almost anyone other than John Kerry probably could have been the president.
Correct. Well, this is why I know that we have a history of making worse choices than you could ever imagine we would make. But you can really see what was wrong with that ticket when you think about the fact that no one can remember who he was running with.
I know.
Then you really know.
Yeah.
In any case, in final news, America just became aware of something that, once again, my mother has been touting for... She looks at his schedule every day. So
another
she knows,
thing you didn't need proof of.
Right. She knows that he doesn't do any fucking work. But now we finally have a report that says that he spends almost half of his working hours in unstructured, quote, executive time.
Which is TV time, tweeting time.
Not time he's doing anything.
Right.
And if you look at his schedule every day, you can see that it's all executive time. I mean, that's usually his schedule goes like this. He wakes up. Maybe he has a briefing. Usually not.
Right.
He has executive time.
As long as there's pictures in the briefing.
Right.
He has the
exactly.
Briefing.
He has lunch with, Mike Pence or somebody, and then he has some more executive time, and then he goes to bed. Usually by 6, his schedule is done, and he's had 4 to 6 hours of executive time.
That's right.
And that's what it is to be the president. So
I love that it's called executive time, too, especially with,
so
with him.
I
because
know.
It just sort of, you know, it just
seems
like,
childish.
That's what I was going to say. It seems like, it's like playtime.
Mm-hmm.
It's adult playtime.
Yeah,
it's
adult.
Recess.
Exactly.
He's in recess.
It's so funny. He said, when the term executive time is used, I'm generally working, not relaxing. Generally, not 100% of the time, just generally.
Yeah.
In fact, I probably work more hours than almost any past president.
Oh, I bet.
Here's the thing. Bill Clinton didn't actually sleep. So I know for a fact that he was doing more work.
But Donald Trump thinks that he's working, if he's watching Fox and Friends.
Well, right. Yeah. And also...
So he might actually think he's working more than any other president because he's confused about what work is.
Well, I was going to say, he doesn't have any examples of what it would be to do hard work. His whole life has been him claiming he works harder than anyone else and not actually doing it. He made a TV show about how hard he works, and that TV show involved him doing almost no work. So I feel like his definition of what he... when he imagines a person working as hard as they possibly can, he's not imagining doing any work. He's imagining 5 to 10 minutes of desk sitting and then a lot of television and Coke.
Right.
Yeah. Coca-Cola, but I bet the other one could be interchanged and changed, switched in there. In any case, that's the news this week.
Yeah.
Next week, we might not have a government. We might. Nobody knows what's going to happen.
We might have
the Gang
seven
of 17
more
might
candidates.
Have figured something out.
Who knows?
Brent and I might be running for president. Here's one thing we promise you, though. If we run for president, we're going to announce once and that's it.
Right.
One.
We're not going to announce.
Single announcement. An exploratory committee.
Tour.
No. We're not going to write a book
first.
We're
not going to go on a book tour. No.
We're going to
tell you
if
and then we're going to do it.
Run for president. You will hear it from us first. And you will know as soon as you hear it that we are running for president.
Uh-huh.
Not that we're thinking about. Once you've gotten on a plane to think about running for president, you're already doing it. So just admit to yourself.
If you're thinking about it in Iowa.
Right. Although, I mean, Eric Garcetti was thinking about it in Iowa, but he didn't announce an exploratory committee. If he had announced one, I would have understood what was happening. If 2 years ago, Eric Garcetti announced an exploratory committee, I'd be like, well, yeah, he does seem to want to run for president.
Right.
And then if he hadn't run, I would have been like, well, that was the right choice. His exploratory committee came up with the right conclusions.
Right.
That's not what these people are doing, though.
No, it's not.
They're just using it as a chance to do two fun announcements instead of one.
Exactly.
And I don't think you should fall for it.
No.
In any case, that's the news this week.
That's it.
We'll talk to you later.
Bye.